Joining us now, the voice of the Predators, Pete Weber. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning, guys. There's nothing better than the morning of a Game 7, I'll tell you that much.
Well, and I was looking at it, since 1939, it really boggles my mind, and which doesn't take a lot, is that the 17th Game 7 in the finals and the first time a Game 7 has ever been played in Boston.
Yes, that's the one that really amazes me, that the Bruins, with all their time that they've been near the top, and certainly during the original 6 days, the earlier portion of those, you would have thought that this would have happened previously, but not until 2019. The league is 102 years old. Come on, guys.
Yeah, but they've won several over the years and everything. But, a Game 7 in and of itself. Now, you were talking earlier about your good buddy Terry Criss and his history in Game 7s.
He played six of them. He emerged on the winning side all six times.
Woo!
Three with the St. Louis Blues, three with the Philadelphia Flyers, so with two of the greater coaches of all time, Scotty Bowman in St. Louis and Freddie Sherrill in Philadelphia. So, yes, now as it turns out, none of those were in a cup final round, but all critical to get to the finals. As a matter of fact, one of those, St. Louis playing at Philadelphia, where they had to win what was then the expansion conference, the West, to move on to the Cup Final. That was the one that they picked up before this guy named Orr went flying through the air just after Christie went off the ice in 1970.
Pete, let's ask, over all of sports, what's the greatest Game 7 you think there is?
The greatest Game 7 that I have seen. Okay. Maybe one of them has to be the last time a St. Louis team beat a Boston team in Boston, Game 7. The 67 World Series, where Bob Gibson closed out the Miracle Red Sox.
Wow. That
year. And Gibson, not only did he pitch them to the victory, he hit a home run in that game. So that was fun. But, you know, that's coming from the mindset of a Cardinals fan. From the hockey world, maybe the best Game 7 I ever saw was actually in the first round of the playoffs, and it turns out to be the only Game 7 the Buffalo Sabres ever won, and that was against the Ottawa Senators in 1997 in Buffalo, and my good friend Derek Plant scored the game winner. There have been so many, though. They just bring so many memories back. And guys, before I came to Nashville, that was the only Game 7 I had ever called. And now all of a sudden, the last several years here, the Predators have had three going, 1-2 in that span. But Game 7s, I think, bring out the best for the fans, and they keep your eyes open. Let's go back to old technology. And maybe now let's use new technology. The 16:9 aspect ratio we have on our television screens, or CinemaScope, as we'd say in the old days in the movie industry, because you have to keep your eyes wide open. You never have an idea, at least I don't, where the winning play might come from. It could come from a change on the bench. It could come from something at far end of the ice that distracts someone at the, shall we saw, the business end of the ice. But, hey, it's going to happen.
You know, I was just looking, you know, talking about Game 7s. ESPN in 2010, the greatest Game 7 in finals history, maybe the NBA, maybe overall, the 1970 final with the, you know, obviously when you had the Lakers and the Knicks, you had Wilt Chamberlain, yeah, and of course the Willis Reed drama. He walks right out on the floor and hits his first two shots and then plays.
He's been caught walking. He hopped up.
Yeah. And so in the NBA, I think it's indisputable what the championship series best Game 7 ever is that one, right? The Knicks and the Willis Reed drama.
Maybe it might have been the one of many Celtics-Lakers finals, and the one where Frank Selvey had a late shot and it wouldn't go down for him, and the Celtics held on in that period of time where it seemed like they never lost. And indeed, when you win 11 out of 13 years in the championship round, that's something special. But everybody, I think, is going to have their own individual memory of what those Game 7s are like.
Oh, I totally agree. You know, it's, you have to go back to the game six Sunday night, St. Louis. I mean, you experience that. We're going to close it out at home, and it's just deflating, you know, for the crowd, for everything, because you're ready for that big party Sunday night, and now you get another opportunity, and that's why Boston tonight sits there at the home game to close out a Stanley Cup. This is an could be an amazing, amazing night for either team that takes it. St. Louis gets it on the road. Boston takes it at home. That's what game seven's about.
Well, St. Louis has been incredibly successful on the road this playoff year, including three wins in the opening round at Winnipeg. They have been by far better on the road than they have been at home. We can't figure that out. I know Predators fans think the same thing about the series last year with the Winnipeg Jets, how they were so much better in Winnipeg than they were here at Bridgestone Arena. Difficult to figure out the psychology of all of this, and I don't really have an answer for it. I'm sure someone in the analytics department will come up with it, but it's something fun, and it is nerve-wracking. It is fun to watch, and as you know, they sold out the viewing party tickets tonight in St. Louis, and so now they're also going to open up the ballpark. Busch Stadium is also going to be host to a viewing party. That's going to be about 65,000 people at viewing parties in downtown St. Louis tonight.
You know, the cool thing about that, it being at you know, where the Cardinals play, Busch Stadium there, I hope that the Blues are the only thing they see successful the rest of the summer there. But anyway, that's another story.
I understand, Mr. Brewer.
You know, but I tell you what, St. Louis had the opportunity. They had it set up. You're at home.
Yeah.
But if you look at this series, I mean, it really doesn't matter, home or away. And that's what I find more, although the NBA Finals has been, the road team is 4-1, but that in any sport, I think the NHL and the playoffs, the home court means the least. You think that way?
I agree. I absolutely agree. Even before what the Predators experienced a year ago with Winnipeg, since the early 90s, when so many of the legacy buildings in the league have been replaced by a more of a cookie-cutter approach, I don't really see the home ice advantage it used to have in Boston, in Buffalo, in Chicago. They're all standardized now. You really have to take a close look on television to try to figure out sometimes where they're playing without knowing the color coding of the uniforms denoting who's at home and who's on the road. It has really become much more standardized and thus much more unpredictable.
Pete, if you could go back and call any game seven, the one that stands out to you, which one would it be?
You know, in any sport?
Yes.
Okay. I think I would want to call game seven where Sandy Koufax came back on 2 days rest in a 65 series against the Minnesota Twins. His elbow hurt so badly, he really didn't throw a curveball, I don't think, after the early innings. And he proved you can throw the ball by very good hitters, and he did it that day. That was just the most remarkable performance I can remember.
Does this generation need a memorable Game 7? I think we do.
Yeah. Heck yes. Well, you mean, for a while, just before the Predators came into being, it seemed like the Stanley Cup final round was sweep, sweep, sweep. And to have this much hanging in the balance, I think, is something special, and I don't think a youngster would ever forget it, as much as I did not forget what Koufax did in 65.
That's amazing. I had no idea about Koufax in 65, and that's the problem, is that you know, we need to look at this history of these games, these game sevens, how important they were to the sports world, and go back and look at those things. I would love to have seen that.
Off the air, I will tell you guys a great story about that Dodger pitching staff, Don Drysdale and Sandy Koufax, but I can't tell it on the air.
Just us.
Come on. No, that'll be. You know what? I will tell you that on January 1st, I was out in Vegas and I loaded up on the Blues. I thought, hey, they're in last place. They're going to win the cup. They're going to win the cup. So, yeah.
Hope you cash in tonight, bro.
But what a story. From last to first, in your perspective, could you remember anything like if they go ahead and close the deal tonight, a team that, you know, at the first of the year, the calendar year, dead in the water?
The closest I can think to this would be coming from baseball again. The 1914 Boston Braves were in last place in July and won the World Series.
That's just amazing to have that. I'm trying to think of any sport that's had that. Because, you know, football, we go back, if a team starts 0-3, they don't make the playoffs, they don't get to the Super Bowl. So this is a very – this is a unique thing with a sports team.
I think it's very unique as well to have a team that has done that. And when they announce the lineups and the coaches, they still announce interim coach Craig Berube of the St. Louis Blues.
And with a rookie goaltender, I tell you, it's a remarkable story.
Yeah, and made further more remarkable by the fact that Jordan Binnington played on the Bruins farm club because the Blues couldn't find a place to place him. So he was teammates with some of these guys on the Providence Bruins in the American League.
Well, I hope tonight we have a game that one that we talk about tomorrow and the next day and 6 months from now and 6 years from now.
And Joe doesn't care. Yeah, Joe doesn't care if it goes four or five overtimes because he's not working tonight. That's right. Why.
There you go. Well, here's the other thing. I hope when you're on the air tomorrow morning, it's still going on.
That would be nice.
Yes, it would.
Well, Pete, obviously some decisions to be made. I think the postseason exit interview that the media had with David Poile, Peter Laviolette, we heard that that the status quo will not be maintained. So there's a Duchesne out there. Obviously, he's expressed interest here. How do you make that work? This roster is going to look a little bit different, I think, come training camp.
A little bit, maybe more. One thing. Should, by some way, Matt Duchesne sign a deal with the Predators, the first thing he'll have to do is apologize to Chris Mason for scoring that offside goal against him 6 years ago that resulted in the offside challenges we've been living with now for the last several seasons.
You know, the thing about it is, though, I think Chris wouldn't mind him coming here.
Probably not.
Right.
Last year in the NHL, he gave up an offside goal.
Well, I mean, the odds that he comes here, Pete?
I wish I could tell you. But everybody seems to think because he owns some property here that the Preds have the inside on it all. But we also have to go through the salary cap considerations. There's a great piece on the Athletic website last night that broke down what everybody has left with which to work. And I think it would be clear that if Matt Duchesne is to come here, probably some substantial roster restructuring would have to be done to accommodate him.
What's the one question you get asked most about this team? The one, because I got it asked twice last night at an event I was at. Are they going to trade PK Subban? I get asked that all the time, and I'm nowhere in the know. That's what I. Get asked?
That's right at the top. That's right at the top of what I hear as well. So this was not when you were on the red carpet last week.
No, it was not. Although I did talk to Roman Josi about it.
And the carpet was blue, by the way.
Oh, okay. The carpet was blue. And let's see. Rod Stewart's daughter you were talking to,
that's
correct?
Right. Yeah, she said that she is one of eight kids. And I said, can you name them all?
Who photobombed you during that shot?
What's that?
You know who photobombed you guys during that shot?
I'm going to say Laviolette.
No, it was Fred's PR man, Nick Barnowski, who came out and stared straight into the camera over your left shoulder.
I love it when Joe the photobomber gets photobombed himself.
Yeah, the all-timer. I'll send you the picture of Chris Chelios photobombing Crispy and me at Joe Louis Arena.
Now, I've seen that. Yes. I have seen that photo before and everything.
That's the one booth where you basically had to sit on each other's lap, right, to call the game?
Well, actually, it wasn't a booth. It was in the playoffs. There were four different telecasts going out that night. We were right next to what was, I think that was the first year it was called NBC Sportsnet. And we got more room because Gord Miller could not continue. He had a bad throat. So they just signed off the air and picked up another broadcast to go across Canada. Yeah.
By the way, when Crispy sits in Pete's lap, it's not because he has to. Okay, I'll just leave it at that. So, anyway.
Mr. Game 7, Terry Crisp.
So where are you going to be watching? Where are you going to be watching it? At the home front tonight?
At the homestead this evening, absolutely. I'll be texting my college buddies in St. Louis and making sure that they're I wish I had telemetry so I could monitor their heart rate.
You know, one thing I've said, I'm for the Blues tonight, and I'll just say that because Boston hadn't won a championship in at least 6 months. And that Blues, yeah. You know, the Blues, that fan base has been solid all this time. They went to the playoffs, what, 26, 27 years in a row, which is still a major sports record. And, you know, but it's different than, boy, you, an SEC fan, a Tennessee fan should not pull for Georgia or Alabama. I see no issue whatsoever if a Predators fan pulls for the Blues, unless they just don't want the Blues to have one, then they don't have any, because of how you procure your talent. It's not recruiting. You don't compete against each other per se, except on the ice. I think, and I don't want Boston to win anything, quite frankly, so I'm pulling for the Blues tonight.
Well, and you know, that's sort of the thing you allude to there. I think Boston has a huge problem with its superiority complex. So let it lie.
Yeah, we got you, Pete. As always, appreciate you, man.
Thank you very much, guys. Enjoy it tonight. And since you're not working a late show tonight, Joe, get a nap this afternoon.
I'll do that, Pete.
All right. Thank you, Pete. Appreciate it, man.
You got it, guys. Bye-bye.